Today is April 20th, 2015. This is a Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Today is just an informational hearing on the statewide public services. So we'll go ahead and open up an informational hearing. And should we go ahead and call them up? Or Ms. Siebert, do you have anything?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, nothing. Just to remind you that we're starting with some work sessions tomorrow. So we'll start with some work sessions tomorrow and next week, and then we'll have a few agencies starting in phase two, I believe the first week in May.
All right, and so we'll go ahead and call up Dan Arp, Scott Reed, and Thomas Manis.
Good morning. Co-chair Rayfield, member of the committee.
I assure you they will trickle in.
For the record, I'm Scott Reed, here today as director of the Oregon State University Extension Service, one of three distinctive statewide public services located at the university. Together with Ag Experiment Station and the Forest Research Lab, we identify issues, we create and share knowledge for the benefit of Oregon's economic prosperity, social and health dimensions, and the natural systems of our state. Let's see. Oh, thank you, Dan. Yeah. My bet is that you know many of our locations where we have people scattered across Oregon. You can find our faculty and staff at Learning and Discovery Forests of the Forest Research Lab, at Agricultural Experiment Stations, and at County Extension offices. This distribution of specialists allows us to put people where the needs are, that allows for rapid response and highly applied solution-based knowledge. We like to say the state is our campus, and we mean it. Dan?
My name is Dan Arp. I serve as Dean of the College of Agricultural Sciences and also as the Director of the Agricultural Experiment Station, one of the three components of the statewide. I wanted to point out that when we think about these three separate components, we work together, so it's an integrated package. So what we're working on in the Ag Experiment Station, we're carrying out research. So we're the research and development wing of the agricultural sciences in the state. And that information then comes through the experiment stations and works its way out into the extension services where it serves the growers. And you'll hear about some of the ways in which that information is used in testimony later this morning. But we also engage with those stakeholders. And so listening to them, learning what their issues are, that information then comes back to the researchers who incorporate that into their research programs and use that then so that together we're always working together and refining the programs that we're working on so that we're meeting the needs of the stakeholders, of society, of the growers. Just wanted to let you know where the budget starts. So this is the budget that came from the governor's recommended budget. So the three components that we have the $57 million for the experiment station, extension service 41.2, and forest research lab 6.3. So that total, that includes a 3.3% increase from the budget for the current biennium. Next slide shows the funding trends. We wanted you to just have a sense of where the funding has been for the three statewides over the last 15 years. The blue line on the top shows the dollars, the nominal dollars. The point there is kind of course, it's bounced up and down over that 15 years, depending on what's been happening with the economy and so on. But if you draw a straight line through that, what you see is that there's been a slight increase over the years in those nominal dollars. But if you then adjust those for inflation, it's been a loss of dollars over the years, and that loss of about So the gain of 267, but a loss of 682,000 per year, that amounts to about five positions per year that we've been losing across the three statewide agencies. Therefore, we're also, next slide, okay. Scott, yep. Looking at or asking for an increase in our budget. So asking for an increase of $16 million over the biennium. This increase has been approved by our new Board of Trustees for the university. So they looked at this increase and agreed that this was a good thing to happen. We have thought about how we would use those $16 million. We've thought deeply about that, and of course want to help solve the problems that the state faces. So we've looked at five areas that we would make investments in with these additional dollars. And those five areas involve sustainable management of working landscapes. And I should be quick to point out, when we think of working landscapes, that covers everything from the oceans, forests, croplands, rangelands, pretty much all the working lands that one thinks about in the state of Oregon. Another important area is ensuring water quality and quantity, so of importance to many aspects of the state. Promoting public health, food safety, and security. And then technologies for business development and value-added manufacturing, and then, of course, making sure that we're educating the workforce of tomorrow. And we'll elaborate just a bit on each of those for you now.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. My name is Thomas Manis. I'm Dean of the College of Forestry and Director of the Forestry Research Laboratory. And thank you very much for an opportunity to testify this morning. I'm going to talk about some of the individual elements of our $16 million proposal. The first one is sustainable management of working landscapes. And this is a major challenge in our state, and we work in a number of areas, and particularly related to endangered species, conducting proactive science to help with these issues. And some of the species that we're working on closely, the sage grouse, there are two positions in this increase of $16 million. They're directly related to grasslands and grazing and sage grouse. The marbled murrelet is a major issue for coastal forestry, and the forestry component of the proposal is a $4 million proposal to study specifically marbled murrelet habitat for the first time. We also work in areas related to coho and spotted owl. Next slide, please. And the second element of our proposal, I don't have to say anything about how important the issue of water quality and quantity is. It's the number one issue that the public are concerned about related to sustainable management of our landscapes. And we provide the science behind the water quality and water quantity. We know that, for example, with forests, if you're actively managing forests, you have a higher water quality provided, and we've conducted research for many years on water quality from these landscapes. Next slide, please.
So in the area of promoting public health, food safety, and security, I'll just say a few words about food safety and security. When one thinks about food security, you're typically thinking about making sure that everyone has adequate quantities of food that's available and nutritious. So in the College of Ag Sciences and the statewide, we are able to deal with food security from soil to shelf. So we work with the soil health, we work with plant varieties that improve nutritional value, but also disease resistance, water, drought resistance, and other important traits that we can have in the plants. We take those then through to from the farm gate into the processing and the value added. What can we do to preserve the food so that they have a longer shelf life? How can we get the most out of those as we harvest them from the fields? An example in food safety would be looking at mechanisms of high-pressure sterilization that can improve the longevity of foods on the shelf. If we look at another aspect of food safety that's out in the field, it's looking at E. coli counts in irrigation water in Malheur area. So those are a couple of examples of food safety as well as the food security issues. And we'll turn it to Scott.
Thanks. I would just add that after you grow the food and get it to the shelf, there's an important set of interactions around consumer behaviors, consumer choices, and the way food and nutrition is used. So we have an extension program in the College of Public Health and Human Sciences that works with families in the way that they address food safety and food security, that focuses on the healthy behaviors that themselves can help people improve their welfares and avoid costly health care through preventative behaviors.
So the fourth area that we've identified are technologies for business development and value-added manufacturing. So when we think about these new technologies, they are both pre- and post-farm gate. So when we think about the things that are happening before we take those crops out of the field, it has to do with, for example, sensor technology. So we're very engaged in different uses of new sensors to help determine what's happening in the field so that growers can make good management decisions based on the information they're getting from those sensors. Sometimes those sensors are in field, but we're also engaged in developing sensors that are on UAVs so that we can take advantage of unmanned aerial vehicles as well for finding out what's happening in those fields. These technologies are, of course, not limited to agriculture. They can be used in other areas as well. Post, that once we get the crops out of the field, then we're looking at how to add value to those, and there are many different technologies that we're engaged in that help to do that. One example that was in the press just recently is the use of coatings. These are edible coatings that would then go onto cherries, which would prevent cracking of those cherries so that there were more of those cherries would come out of the field with high value and with less spoilage.
And value-added manufacturing is a huge issue for the forest industry and the rural economies in our state. We know that the economy of Oregon has been booming lately, but the economy of rural communities in Oregon has not been booming and have been left behind. And what I'd like to say is the most important issue facing rural economies is not how much timber we harvest in the state, but how many jobs we produce with every 1,000 board feet of timber that we harvest. And this is really the job of the Forestry Research Laboratory, to turn that stack of logs into high-value products, and something that we're working on and trying to invent new types of products. There's been a recent worldwide trend towards building tall buildings out of wood, which is a new market that Oregon can really take advantage of, and this is an area where we're actually leaders in the United States and probably will have the very first producer of cross-laminated timber for structural buildings in the state of Oregon. So this is a really important area for us if we really want to create family wage-paying jobs in rural communities like Sweet Home and Oak Ridge and many other communities across our state.
The fifth theme integrates the learning, discovery, and engagement themes of the university and takes advantage of working from a higher education institution. We believe our unique installation statewide can provide unique and effective learning experience for those and therefore contribute to the workforce in the natural resource sector of tomorrow. A recent example of a concept that we've dubbed Open Campus works with our 4-H Youth Development Program and community colleges across the state to enhance and provide access to kids that would otherwise have college and career pathways and degree completion for our Oregon residents that have some college and no degree, and they're place-bound. They live and work in the same communities that we have our own people. Your investment in the statewide public services are hard-working dollars. You know that, of course, but if you only look at the extension faculty for the moment, each of our community-based educators works and supports with about 70 trained volunteers. You know them as master gardeners, master woodland managers, master food preservers, master recyclers, master naturalists, and 4-H leaders, among others. This incredible leveraging of our workforce allowed us to reach about 2.1 million Oregonians, more than half of our state's population in the last year. Last slide, I think.
Yeah, and the last point we wanted to make, picking up this theme of leveraging, has to do with leveraging of dollars. So for every dollar that the state invests in the agricultural experiment station, our scientists use that to leverage additional dollars, primarily from federal grants and contracts, though not only from those federal grants and contracts. So for every dollar that the state invests, our scientists go out and bring in another $2.50. Federal grants and contracts, but also from other private sources, including commodity commissions within the state that help then support the research that's done in the state. That's a direct leveraging, but that doesn't take into account the impact of the research that's done. So when one looks at the actual impact of the research that is done, you see more like a tenfold leveraging of those dollars that are invested. And a good example of that is to look at wheat varieties that are produced. So the dollars invested by the state bring additional dollars in from the federal government. Those dollars are used to develop a new wheat variety. That wheat variety then is used in much of northeastern Oregon and increases wheat yields, farmer income, and in many cases can also have other benefits as well. But then that spills out beyond the state because that wheat variety becomes the one that Washingtonians and Idahoans want to use as well. And so if you look at the spillage out into other states, the investment of a dollar in statewides here in Oregon actually returns about a 20-fold return on investment when looked at beyond the, including Oregon and outside the state.
And the situation with the Forestry Research Laboratory, the forest industry and the small woodland owners in our state have traditionally provided a one-to-one match for every dollar provided for a statewide public service to the FRL. They provide a match to that. And the total match to research dollars coming from statewide public service funds for the Forestry Research Laboratory is $6 returned for every $1 invested. And that allows us to expand the research that we do greatly. You might know that the College of Agricultural Sciences and the College of Forestry together are rated number 7 in the world by QS World University Ranking Systems. And a large part of that is because of the statewide public service funding for these research laboratories and the matching dollars that we bring in. So this concludes our testimony this morning, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Senator Hansel.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Dr. Arp, you mentioned the wheat varieties. Mm-hmm. I've been telling people that it's about a 10-year cycle that you get a new variety and it loses its oomph after about a decade, so you have to have something backing it ready to go. Am I correct in that 10-year window, or has that changed, or was it wrong to begin with?
No, so there are a couple changes in that. The window is getting a little shorter. So instead of 10 years, it's now down to 7 years, and our scientists are working to try to get that to about 4 years. And they're using some of the modern techniques of genomics in order to shorten that time frame a little bit. The reason that they're often looking for new varieties is to increase yields, increase disease resistance, increase productivity given the water stress conditions you have in eastern Oregon. So there's always a demand for the next better wheat variety. It's not so much that the ones in the field are losing their ability to perform, but you're always looking for that next best one. And if you don't, you will lose the competition with other parts of the world where that is happening all the time. So there's a constant push to increase the yields.
So if you break that cycle or take a chunk out of the normal research, then you really get behind the curve and like you said, lose your competitive advantage.
Yes, exactly.
And we're probably, in the Pacific Northwest, the leading producer of soft white winter wheat in the world, right? Wouldn't you say, or one of them for sure?
We are one of the largest producers of the soft white winter. About 80% of what we produce leaves the state and goes across to other countries in Asia in particular. So it's one of the largest exports from the state. It's also one of the largest value and volumes that leave the port of Portland.
Dr. Manis, I would at some time would very much like to see the Forestry Research Lab. And I don't know if my other colleagues, but maybe we could do a legislative tour some afternoon or some when we're down here.
Absolutely, Senator Hansel. We'd love to have you and your colleagues come for a visit. It'd be great. We could show you our forestry research laboratories for producing new types of wood products, and we have a lot of new equipment in the laboratory we could show you. And be happy to have you come around.
Great. Thanks.
Senator Denbrough. Hmm.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. First of all, let me say I'm a real supporter of the statewides. You know, last December, I think it was, Senator Hansel brought some people over to Portland for one of my constituent copies, people from his district. And we were focusing on things that bring rural and urban Oregon together. And, it turned out that among my constituents were a couple of people who were active in the Master Gardener program and farmers markets, you know, some other things that, you know, they were actually, they keep lobbying me on the Ag Extension Services. These are our people in the heart of Portland. And I found that really interesting, that that is something that really unites the state. And so I'm very supportive of it. And I'm really interested in this, you know, the new building techniques, the use of wood in the, you know, the big buildings. I feel like I'm seeing more wood already in construction in Portland and all the construction that's going on. And I think that that's a great thing. I certainly have gotten the message, decommodify or die. I've heard that. And I think it really is important. You know, in terms of the, you know, the plans to do these, you know, huge, whatever they're called, you know, the big pieces of construction, you know, from laminate, are there thoughts about where that fabrication might happen? Because I know there are transportation issues with it. Those things are so huge. And I probably shouldn't say this, but I'd hate to have them located in the Portland area. I mean, it would be great if they could be out in the rural area.
Yes, thank you, Senator Domborough, members of the committee. These products are almost always manufactured close to the primary production facility, so it'd be close to sawmills or plywood plants, because otherwise you're shipping more material to the place where you would fabricate these things. And the panels can be 80 feet long and 10 feet wide. That's the largest panel that we produce right now, but you can also produce in 20 feet at 40 foot. So shipping is only a problem with the largest of these particular panels. So this really does have an opportunity to put high value manufacturing in places that really need it, you know, where employment is reduced from reductions in harvest and those types of things.
And just a follow-up, is there, I know it's all kind of speculative right now, but timelines for where this is all going?
Well, right now the issue is that architects and engineers want to build these buildings, and it's hard to source the material. There are two plants that produce structural cross-laminated timber in Canada. One in Western Canada in Penticton, BC, and one in Quebec in Eastern Canada. And so the buildings that we're seeing going up are either spec from wood from there or from Austria, believe it or not. Right now in Australia, this is really taking off. There are 19 tall wood buildings under construction in Australia right now, every one of them built from wood sourced from Austria. You can believe that. The path to get that wood to Australia, they would love to be able to source material from the Pacific Rim, from Oregon. So the demand is there, and now we're starting to see, for example, Riddle Laminators will be the first producer. They've produced panels. They're working closely with the Forestry Research Laboratory. We're doing the testing and the design. They're producing the panels. They started production about 3 weeks ago. We now have those panels in the lab, and we're testing them to start the process of getting them certified for structural materials, and then you're going to see a business in Riddle, Oregon, producing this material.
Okay. Ms. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Well, appreciate the presentation this morning. I'm a big fan of the work that the extensions do across the board. Really big fan of the Food Innovation Center, and have experienced working with, I guess Laura Barton's retired now, but working with the folks down there, particularly around some of the farm-to-school work that they've done. One of the things, we've got Senate Bill 657, which I'm a sponsor on, and one of the asks in there is for some dollars on the Forest Research Laboratory. How do you anticipate that, you know, as you're looking at funding, and funding is always an issue, but particularly around, like, the juniper piece and how you're going to engage with that? Because I feel like there's a lot of room for the extensions to be able to help do what the Food Innovation Center has done for food products, and you can literally count numerous products that are generating a fortune for Oregon, and doing really well in job creation that came out of the food side. How do you anticipate with that coming to market and the interest from the legislature being able to support that, and is that part of the $4 million ask in Senate Bill 657?
Well, Representative Parrish, members of the committee, That is part of the Forestry Research Laboratory funding, the base funding that we have. We're working on testing of juniper products in our laboratory right now. We're working closely with Sustainable Northwest and others on that. This is a huge initiative, and it's really important because if we're going to undertake this restoration in a big way, we're going to have some kind of value from these. So we're looking at the structural properties of this wood. We're looking at it for like signposts and guardrails and things like that, but other types of products as well. It's also used to produce lumber for producing wood for like raised garden beds and things like that, and you're starting to see some product there. As far as the $4 million increase, that's a specific project for really studying and understanding marbled murrelet habitat. This is a real issue for coastal forestry. We do not have the science to understand what needs to be done for management in the future. And so we're going to start a two-year project to band birds and really understand where they go and their nesting habitat so that we've got real science to back up the land management practices that we have.
If I could just add, Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Parrish, it's a good example of the relationship between the kind of the R&D that the statewides do. So Forest Research Lab and Ag Experiment Station conducts this highly applied research. The extension system is on the ground statewide all the time, so we are working on that juniper issue and have been for some time. So as innovations emerge, you can be assured they'll be put to work.
Can I just one follow-up?
Yeah.
What would be, I think, helpful for us, at least for me, as we look at, you know, how do we use these dollars, and I consider funding the extension economic development dollars. I mean, I really do see the mm-hmm. relationship between the work that you do and final products that are coming out and the support to innovators and entrepreneurs that comes out of the extension. It would be helpful, I think, maybe for this body to see that in to the extent that you have it, that when a group like the Food Innovation Center, that's my wheelhouse and experience with the extension, you know, says we're going to help this product get to market, and now this product has a real company behind it, and they've hired Oregonians, and they're, you know, they've got millions mm-hmm. of dollars in sales, and there are products that have come out of that Food Innovation Center that look like that. You know, your level of investment or our level as a state investment to actually help that company get off the ground, if you can quantify that for us to the extent of your ability, I think that would be helpful, that, you know, a $16 million ask, you know, in addition to your budget, could actually, based on historical figures, translate into, and here's what we've been able to do with that type of money in the past, and it's equal to X amount of dollars and X amount of jobs. I mean, I think that would be very helpful for me to understand. I mean, I think I sort of have a sense of what that looks like just having engaged in that one piece of the of OSU and the work that they do, but I think you could extrapolate that across other pieces, the work that you're doing with to create new blueberries, for example, down in, you know, right outside of the south side of Clackamas there to do that type of work. I mean, I just think that would be helpful to hear, and I think that's missing from the presentation today.
Sure. All right. Are there any other further questions?
Yes, Senator Hanson.
I just need to follow up on what Senator Demarest said, that when I brought some of my farmer constituents down and met with his constituents, it's a great meeting, and one of the things that became apparent is that my farmer constituents are master gardeners also. It's just that they have a few more acres in their garden than his does.
My people actually listen to the advice. Yeah.
All right. Are there any other further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. We'll go ahead and call up Director Koba from the Department of Agriculture, and it looks as though State Forester Decker is not here, but there is a representative from the Department of Forestry. And I apologize as I have forgotten your name that quickly, even though it's been just a week.
Oh, what a week.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Agriculture. First of all, I want to thank the Natural Resources Subcommittee for having this hearing on the statewide's. They're kind of an orphan because they're housed in the Higher Education Commission budget now, not just Oregon State University. And yet the work that they do really supports Oregon's natural resources industry. So this committee typically doesn't see them, but I think that the work that they do and the importance for our industry in agriculture and forestry cannot be stressed enough. So I wanted to just briefly highlight some real case examples that some of you are intimately familiar with in terms of the work that, in particular, the Experiment Station and the Extension Service does in support of Oregon's agriculture industry and in support of what the Department of Agriculture is trying to accomplish. First and foremost, Experiment Stations and Extension Service does the traditional work that we all think of, so the wheat varieties, Senator, that you were mentioning, or pest and disease kinds of research. I think about most recently spotted wing Drosophila, which came to the state of Oregon, and OSU quickly assembled a team of experts around that pest and the best way to combat it here in the state of Oregon, which does impact blueberries, needless to say. And so that's oftentimes what we think of when we think of the research that happens at Oregon State University is those classic, that classic kind of research, which is critically important, and particularly when you think about where we're going with global population and shrinking landmass around the world. We cannot feed the projected global population in the year 2050 with our current land base and our current technology. So continued investment in research and technology development around the whole host of things that agriculture does is critical, or we're going to have even more hungry people than we currently do. And obviously there's the debate about just the infrastructure chain being able to get food throughout the world, but we also know that we don't have the current technology able to feed a projected population in global population in 2050. So that continued investment in research and technology development is critical, and unfortunately we have seen over the last couple decades quite a bit of disinvestment in the public investment into research and technology development. So then let me switch gears to a couple of things that you all have experienced with us in some sense or another, and the critical role that Oregon State University has done in partnership with the Department of Agriculture. First of all, my favorite topic in the world, canola. We currently have a moratorium on the books of growing canola in the valley, but in partnership with that, last legislative session, the legislature invested in research that Oregon State University is conducting basically around brassica production in the Willamette Valley, of which canola is just one part of that. And truly, how do we manage pest disease issues, and what is the capacity for brassica production in the Willamette Valley? So that research is currently underway at the university, and I'm sure all of you will be very excited to see the outcomes of that work. The second topic that I would touch on, another one of my favorites, is genetically engineered agriculture. And Dean Arp was the co-chair of the governor's genetic engineered task force that met all during the course of last year. And in addition, there were two Oregon State University scientists that also sat on that task force. And I think as we move forward in dealing with genetic engineered agriculture and other technology in agriculture production, that partnership with Oregon State University and that scientific core that they have around knowledge in this area is going to be critical, not just for agriculture producers, but for consumers as well. These are a couple of examples of things that are happening in the experiment station world. On the Extension Service side, I would point out the focus around pollinators and pollinator health, and the critical role that Oregon State University plays in education and outreach to consumers and producers around how to best care for pollinators, whether that's use of pesticides or habitat or diseases, health in terms of what we do in genetic diversity in hives, all of those things. Oregon State University plays a very, very important role in that work. And then the two things that I want to highlight going forward, which are priorities in the governor's budget, and I know that Dean Arp mentioned this earlier on in his testimony, but first of all is the water initiative and the Clean Water Partnership that is a priority for the governor and Oregon State University has played and will continue to play a really, really important role for us, particularly in our agency as we look at water quality and the kinds of riparian vegetation that we're asking producers to maintain on their land. We know that that vegetation is different in the Willamette Valley than what we would apply in wheat country in eastern Oregon. And that research and network that Oregon State University has to help us educate landowners in taking care of their land is very, very important. And then finally, I would touch on the sage-grouse initiative and the critical role that Oregon State University plays here as in a couple of areas that you heard about, dealing with juniper and trying to remove juniper from the landscape, but as well the on-the-ground work in terms of livestock grazing and livestock grazing management and using that as a tool to deal with invasives and other tools that we're going to have to employ on the ground as we deal with sage-grouse habitat in southeast Oregon. And our success in this area is absolutely critical to maintain the kind of life and the culture that sustains those rural economic communities in southeast Oregon. So these are just a few of the things that I wanted to touch on. I could spend all day talking about this. The Food Innovation Center, where we're co-located with Oregon State University in downtown Portland, certainly is a high success story, and I'm glad that you had a good experience there. And with that, I'll close and could certainly answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Peter Doherty, and I serve as the Private Forest Division Chief for the Oregon Department of Forestry. And I'm pleased to be here to discuss how the Forestry Research Lab and Forestry Extension supports the Department of Forestry's mandates. As you heard last week, ODF directly manages 83,000 acres of state forest land, and in that role, we develop management strategies, implement and monitor those management strategies for effectiveness, and adjust accordingly. As part of, we also administer the Forest Practice Act, which requires effectiveness monitoring for the Board of Forestry's adaptive management process. And in both these processes, we identify key research and monitoring questions and collaborate with research organizations to ensure relevant science is conducted. Oregon State University plays an important role in this system. OSU as a whole and the College of Forestry in particular provide a forum for developing and collaborating on research priorities. For some examples for our State Forest Division, recent studies on Swiss needle cast, commercial thinning, and young stand management have been critical. Both State Forest and the Forest Practice Program have benefited from the Watershed Research Cooperative studies that look at responsive watersheds, including water quality, to contemporary forest management practices. The ongoing Trask Watershed Study on small headwater streams will help inform our response to concerns about our coastal zone management plan, which you heard about last week. Currently, our State Forest Division has a number of research priorities, namely research that will inform cost-effective management strategies to help us ensure financial viability on state forest lands. These strategies will protect and restore key watersheds and help contribute to stabilizing populations of fish and wildlife. Nested within these priorities is an emphasis on the marbled murrelet. Murrelet nest site dating is lacking and somewhat dated. The basic ecology around nest site selection and the extent of habitat is foundational information that is needed. OSU is well positioned to conduct this murrelet research. Our partnership with OSU Research is well established. ODF sits on the board of OSU's Institute for Working Forest Landscapes, which provides statutory oversight for the research lab on research funds and progress on research studies. Already, the board is advising on the selection and funding of nearly $1 million in research projects this year. Last week, you also heard about our efforts to increase the pace and scale of treatments on federal forest land, particularly in eastern Oregon. The Forestry Research Lab and Forestry Extension have a jointly appointed full-time faculty member at the college who works with Eastern Oregon collaboratives and public involvement that have helped us increase the amount of active management treatments in Eastern Oregon. OSU Extension has also been a critical partner in our private forest division's work with family forest lands. Forestry Extension serves on the Board of Forestry Committee for Family Forest Lands, and they've partnered with us on efforts to simplify what can be a confusing maze of state and federal and non-governmental certification programs into a single set of guidelines, templates, and tools, which is now housed on the OSU Extension website. We've also formed an educational partnership with OSU Extension and others to reach more family forest landowners. The OSU College of Forestry has also been critical in maintaining our small but effective urban and community forestry program, which you heard about last week. With declining federal funds, we've had to create some innovative approaches to keeping the program viable. We partner with OSU on many grant proposals that provide extra funding and innovative approaches to managing our urban forest. And currently, our program director, Paul Reese, works half-time for us at ODF and half-time at OSU as a faculty member. And this unique partnership has resulted in the first of its kind online graduate certificate in urban forestry. In closing, the department looks forward to building on its partnership with OSU, both in ongoing discussions and collaboration on research and monitoring projects, as well as a continued collaboration on education and outreach to family forests and urban and community forests. Thanks, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Dembrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Katie. I probably should have asked this of Dr. Arp, but I assume that the department is partnering with Extension and the research station on adaptation to global warming, you know, dealing with the effects of global warming and those crops that may be coming up from California, and, you know, how do we plan for a warmer temperature? Now, having said that, I very much enjoyed this last weekend, don't get me wrong, but, you know, what kind of planning do we have to do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dembrough, there's a lot of work going on in this area in terms of adaptation with climate change. First of all, we may be hosting a new range of crops such as lemons and limes and oranges, being a little bit facetious, but there's no doubt that the work is being done at Oregon State University as well as other partner land-grant universities in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State University, and University of Idaho. The research is fascinating, and it's worth spending some time with Oregon State University to go over that, but that is a critical role for our industry moving forward, and it's not just new variety developments, it's precision irrigation, it's new kinds of pests and diseases that we'll be combating, so a lot of work here. But on the flip side, I also think that we see agriculture as being well-poised to take advantage of these changes. So it's not doom and gloom for our industry, but the work that Oregon State University and other land-grant research universities and extension service will be doing in this area is absolutely critical.
All right. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. We'll call up Christina McNitt and Denver Pugh.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, Christina McNitt with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. We're delighted that you have the opportunity to hear about the statewides in front of your committee today, and I just wanted to highlight how incredibly important the program is to agriculture and the forest industries, and to highlight in the forest industry that you don't have any other state in the country that has this type of scientific basis coming from both the legislature and from the landowners, and that's why we have the College of Forestry at Oregon State University. The Forest Research Lab is Oregon's primary source for conducting and distributing scientific, technical, social, and economic analysis of forest resource issues. Researchers work on nearly every aspect of forestry and related renewable materials, including tree genetics, forest soils, tree growth, forest watersheds, water quality, forest wildlife, forest and climate, forest management, forest recreation, timber harvesting and transportation, wood products manufacturing, wood products engineering, high-tech wood-based composites, uses for wood products in green buildings, bio-based renewable energy, forest policy, and economics, and the human dimensions of forest resources. It's a big deal. I, unfortunately, am a poor substitute for Dr. Jake Verskeil. He's the program manager of the Western Wildlife Program at the National Council for Air and Stream Improvement. But just as an example of the cooperation and the importance of the Forest Research Lab in this policy option package, Dr. Verskeil has submitted a statement for this committee, which I'd like to read. With respect particularly to the POP, the marbled murrelet was provincially and federally listed as threatened south of its Alaska breeding range in 1990 and 1992, respectively. Unlike similar species who nest on coastal cliffs and offshore rocks, marbled murrelets primarily nest in trees in older age coniferous forests. After nearly two decades of management, several concerns still exist for forest managers related to current applications of science for the marbled murrelet. The remaining unknown aspects of murrelet ecology are largely a product of limited scope and funding for past research efforts. The Oregon State University research team's policy option package proposal for murrelet research will address many of the most pertinent issues regarding how murrelets use inland nesting habitat. Researchers expect to be able to quantify the degree to which murrelet occurrence can be used to predict nesting activity and reproductive success. Several behaviors of marbled murrelet at inland sites have been considered indicative of nesting, yet follow-up work to confirm purported correlations have been lacking due to the expense of telemetry studies required to achieve nesting confirmation. The OSU research team will also determine the efficacy of at-sea captures of murrelets for attaching tracking devices to locate active murrelet sites, nests. Prior efforts off the coast of Northern California and Southern Oregon proved that adequate numbers of murrelets can be captured for telemetry studies, although not without significant expense. The last substantial telemetry efforts in this region to assess inland behavior of murrelets occurred 13 years ago. Since that time, new satellite transmitters weighing less than 2 grams are on the market that will allow researchers to program satellite data transfer times and achieve nighttime, therefore nest location fixes, from breeding murrelets. The new transmitter technology will also allow researchers to quantify the extent to which murrelet nests are spatially clustered and potentially whether birds return to the same tree, the same patch, or stand in subsequent years. This proposal represents a unique confluence of research expertise, collaboration, and new technologies for tracking marbled murrelets. These factors, combined with the requested funding, will be necessary to better understand the behavior of this secretive bird and ultimately to provide the scientific basis to guide coastal forest management in the future. So thank you for letting me read that into the record from Nakazi, a key partner in this, as well as the Department of Forestry. And I think for your record, you have a support letter from the Wetlands Conservancy and, of course, the Oregon Forest Industries Council supports. Thank you.
Chairman Rayfield and the other committee's members, my name is Denver Pugh. I'm a sixth-generation farmer in Shedd. If people don't know where Shedd is, it's down by Corvallis. Okay, just give a rough estimate. My family and I have raised seed crops such as grass seed, wheat, meadow foam, white clover, radish, white mustard. And we are also have previously grown crops such as fibroflax and barley in hopes to develop those markets as well. We are also currently in the early developmental stage of establishing our first hazelnut orchard. So Oregon State also plays a very strong role in what my farm has done and where we're at today, for I'm also fourth-generation graduate of Oregon State University. Oregon State programs such as the Extension Service and research stations have not only helped my farm personally, but Oregon agricultural industry as a whole. Many of the crops raised and cultural practices we do have been researched and developed at various research stations, then brought to us by Extension. From plant breeding to water and nutrient management and chemical efficacy trials, there is just some of the OSU's research and extensions have given us to the farmers. I wrote out a testimony. I'm not going to read the whole thing verbatim, but I want to touch on some of the stuff that's really personal to my farm and what I've seen. One being what Senator Hansel, you pointed out, the wheat breeding program. It's not just eastern part of the state and up in Washington, the valley here. It has soft white winter wheat, OSU's wheat breeding program. They've done an excellent job providing wheat varieties that actually grow to our wetter climates here in the valley. And so they've looked at yield potentials, disease resistance, a number of factors that make it very viable for myself and others in the valley to produce a substantial amount of wheat. So another cereal grain crop that came out of that is barley, something that I touched on that I grow on my farm, or have raised on my farm, I should say. It's through the research station's annual tour that I learned about certain types of barleys and that we can actually grow them in the valley here. And looking for a alternative to grass seed and wheat and other crops, I ventured out and tried to do a food-grade barley. But I work directly with researchers at Oregon State and the research station in doing so. At the same annual research day, or field day, at the research station, I learned about white mustard. I'm growing currently, on my third year growing white mustard, but it wasn't until last year that I saw OSU actually had been growing it in their plots, and their plots looked a lot better than my field. And so I was able to approach the researcher and inquire about what their practices were as opposed to my practices. And I am currently, we just planted last week, but I'm currently implementing some of the practices I learned from them directly. So I'm got my fingers crossed. Hopefully I will come up with a better yield this year. Some of the other things that we do directly related to my farm or directly related from OSU that we do on our farm was back in the 90s, OSU was on the forefront looking at residue management practices with the phase out of field burning in most of the valley. Well, they looked at many different aspects such as cost analysis of chopping the straw back to the nutrient loss of removing the straw. Well, it's because of this nutrient analysis that they developed that I make my sole decisions on whether or not I'm actually going to chop my straw back or remove it. So there's various publications on that. Extension. Without extension coming out to the farmers, we wouldn't know about these new practices and things that are going on. I mentioned early stages development of hazelnuts on my farm. It's through numerous seminars that I've been to that all have utilized extension from Oregon State University to talk about their varieties, everything from planting rates to nutrient packages to yields, wherever, for the different varieties. I mean, it's all coming out of Oregon State. And it doesn't matter who put on the seminar, that is. It seems like it's everybody, it's always Oregon State that's there preaching what they've done. And so I'm looking directly at that when deciding what variety of trees I'm planting, what my spacings are, what ground to even put it on. I just recently read a research on that. So there's, like I said, the countless, it's just numerous what they're doing there and how it is viable to what I do. More recently, I attended Oregon State put together a slug summit, which was held in strong request from various Oregon agricultural industries in the need to find a solution to the multi-million dollar slug problem we're having. Oregon State Extension and researchers got together to hear various members of the grass seed, Christmas tree, and nursery industries concerning concerns and desires to try to find a resolution to this problem. I can't help but feel that it's only going to be through the help of OSU that we do find the solution. I mean, this is a major, major problem for these industries, namely the grass seed industry. I'm not even going to go to dollars of how much money I've spent on the bait that we throw out to try to curb the slug activity without very good success. You know, we're able to control to some extent, but I'm still losing substantial money by losing my crop. And so but that's something that Oregon State realizes, that there is a need for this, and they're actually decided to put together a summit to learn more about it, which was great. As you can see, I hold Oregon State Extension and their research stations in high regard. I see they're a very valuable asset to the agricultural industry and more personally my farm. I encourage you to please consider all that they do for farmers like myself and when determining the monetary needs for their budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hansel.
Denver, I just want to thank you for your testimony, and I think you really epitomize the partnership, particularly of your generation, with the research and what OSU is about and the Extension Service and the various challenges you have to be able to be productive, and that what OSU is doing to help you is just excellent. Thank you.
Well, thank you. They're a great learning environment. It's really I look at it as a partnership, you know. It's easy for them to come to me and for me in return to come to them to look for answers.
Are there any other questions? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll call up Helen Rudenclaw and Jim Burnell.
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, thank you for letting me testify today. My name is Haley Rattenclaw. My husband Bruce and I farm about 1,000 acres in Yamhill and Polk counties. Our farm is a mixed cropping farm with a diverse range of 10 different crops, ranging from wheat and grass seed, special seed crops, green beans, and sweet corn. We've previously been selected as conservation cooperators by both the Yamhill and Polk County Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And in 2009, we were selected as one of four national outstanding young farmers based in part on our conservation efforts. As most farmers, we know that being good stewards of our land is important. However, to stay on the land, we also need to make sure we are financially sustainable. We started farming when we were very young, and it was touch and go for many years as to whether we'd be able to make it or not. It's extremely important to us, as it is to all people, that we spend our dollars wisely. We rely on a variety of support industries for help when it comes to information about chemicals, fertilizers, crop choices, etc. While we enjoy good relationship with companies supplying that information, the basis of that relationship is still to sell us product. The more, the better. We do have another source of information. It comes from the Extension Service. The Extension Service gives us unbiased, science-based results that we can use to balance information we get from the companies. Every year, we bring up the fertilizer guides that the Extension Service publishes and use those to help us determine how much fertilizer to put on our fields. I can tell you that without that information, and even with it, we're pushed to put on more. However, we soil test all our fields every year, and combined with the research from OSU, it allows us to be confident that we're putting on the right amount of crop nutrients. This benefits the state as a whole because we're only putting on what the crop needs, thereby reducing the chance of leaching any fertilizer through to the waterways of Oregon. But this is research that needs to happen on an ongoing basis to stay relevant. Agriculture is continually evolving. Our varieties and production methods are leading to higher yields, and the fertilizer guides need to take that into account to maintain credibility. Then there are areas where the only information comes from OSU. For example, OSU ran some experiments some years ago to determine the optimum time to cut grass seed. We moisture test the seed heads in our fields as they are maturing, and we now know the exact range for moisture to aim at for each grass species that we grow. This is information that makes us money. By cutting at the optimum time, we lose less seed to shadow loss while maintaining the high quality that Oregon grass seed is known for worldwide. The fertilizer guides and the grass seed cutting time are examples of very practical research that has direct impact on Oregon's farmers. If a problem comes up during the year, one of our first calls is to our local extension agent. When we first started farming, there were 3 crops agents in the valley. That number is now down to 2. There's also a reduction on campus staff. As you have previously heard, we have a developing issue right now in Oregon in terms of slugs. On our farm, we have shifted to practicing mostly no-till. It's a system where you don't work the soil between planting different crops. This increases organic matter, improves soil structure, leading to a healthier, more alive soil. No-till also reduces soil erosion, helps keep soil sediments and potential fertilizer and chemical residues out of Oregon's waterways. So environmentally, no-till is a good thing. However, in the process, we've created a great environment for slugs. It turns out slugs are an issue not just for us, but across all of agriculture, including Christmas trees bound for export. This is a problem we really need OSU to address, but there's no specialist anymore at OSU with that expertise. Restoring funding to get the statewide back to the previous strength would help us immensely. I believe that the state of Oregon gets an amazing deal out of its support of OSU and the statewides. The College of Ag, as you heard, is ranked as one of the top agricultural institutions in the whole world. As I mentioned, agriculture is in a state of rapid transition. World population is estimated to reach 9 billion people by 2050, and we need to almost double food production to keep up with demand. We only have the farmland we have today, and you're aware some of the best land slowly gets swallowed up by cities. It's therefore imperative that we get as much production out of our current farmland as we can, but in a sustainable way. A strong agricultural research program coupled with an efficient way to get that information out to farmers is vital in meeting that challenge. I therefore urge your support for the $16 million request for the statewides.
Please continue.
Co-chair, members of the committee, you have opportunities as Ways and Means Committee members to grow our economy and our tax base, and this is definitely one of them. The legislature played a role over the years back in starting in the early 1980s.
State your name for the
record. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My name is Jim Bernal. I'm founder and president of Willamette Valley Vineyards. It's just you're also so familiar. Back in the early 1980s, and since that time, the legislature has made a number of changes in state regulation that has fostered our fermentation industries, whether it's the microbrewery changes in the law, or the change in the law that allowed us to establish wineries on farmland, or and do the variety of things that we could do to grow our industries now, including distillers. We have just in the wine industry now, since the creation of our industry, really beginning in the early in the late 70s, early 80s, we have over 17,100 employees now. In brewing, it's 6,600 employees. And distillers are growing rapidly at 400 employees. There are 76 distillers now, 615 wineries, and 185 brewers. Really a small business scattered throughout all of the parts of Oregon. 71 cities have brewers in them. They're dotted all throughout your counties. Our wineries are dotted throughout your counties. And as you know, you probably read or heard of the economic impact studies that were done. In the wine industry, it's believed to be that the industry now produces about $3.35 billion annually in economic impact. The brewers estimate $2.83 billion in annual impact. And that goes to the addressing Representative Parrish's question about making that connection between the work that's been done at Oregon State and what's being done now in the economy. You know, for me at Willamette Valley Vineyards, Representative Gomberg will remember this. This is the 1982 spray guide for grapes I got from the OSU Extension when I first started the vineyard. Representative Gomberg will remember this pruning guide that I got from them because we laid it down on the ground and looked at the guide and then looked at the vines to figure out how to prune them. And so we're very much a creature of not just the regulatory changes you've made, but also the investments you've made in OSU Extension. So we have a great opportunity, but we also have a danger, and that is that our industries are growing rapidly. But our danger is that without the research, the innovation, and also the young people that help fuel our industries, we have the potential of performing below the level of excellence without the level of innovation and young people that we get from OSU. This particular legislation includes a professor for fermentation in fermentation microbiology and chemistry. It will include a professor in consumer marketing and four support positions in wine fermentation science, brewery manager, a cheese technician, and a vineyard manager. All these fundamental to supporting the growth of our industry. And I wanted to just briefly tell you a story about how important this is to people in our industry. I lease a vineyard called Elton Vineyard. I lease it from Dick and Betty O'Brien, who wanted to retire from establishing their vineyard. They established it in the same year I did, 1983. And the lease that I have with them goes longer than they likely will live. And so they came to me and they said, Jim, we want you to buy the vineyard out of our estate when we pass. We want you to be fair. We want you to make sure it has a market appraisal so that you're paying the fair price of that at the time you buy it out of our estate. And the entire net value of what you pay is to be divided equally between Oregon State University's viticultural program and extension and Chemeketa Community College's wine program. They're giving their entire value of what they've created over their lives back to the programs that they so believe in. Years ago, I came here before the Ways and Means and asked them to invest in fermentation science, and you matched my contribution. And we established the very first fermentation science professorship in the United States at Oregon State University. Look at what has been fostered. But we are growing rapidly, and yet the support on innovation, research, and the development of these young people is not. So I ask you, amongst all the things you must balance, all the priorities you must balance, the difficult decisions you make, please consider how important it is to growing our economy and growing our tax base. You will get this money back in the bushelful. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Well, first, Allie, thank you. It's good to see you again. And if you've not been out to her farm yet and toured it, it's gorgeous. And what you're doing out there is spectacular. So I appreciate you coming and taking time away from your busy operation to come and testify. Jim, my question specifically to you around sort of the issue that we're hearing and maybe what legislatively we need to be thinking about as it relates to water issues sort of the climate change that we're hearing is going to affect our wine industry in the coming future. What are you doing, or what are you suggesting, or do you have suggestions for us, I should say, with what we need to be doing to have concern? I mean, you certainly, $3 billion-plus industry, we need to preserve and protect that. And I'm curious what school of thought is happening out
there
that we need to be paying
attention
to.
One of the things that the Department of Water Resources is doing that's very innovative, Oregon Department of Water Resources is working with us to figure out how to more effectively use water and apply it through water rights. Years ago, a fellow winemaker and I, Eric Lemelson, approached the Department of Water Resources with an idea. And that was, if we could apply water and prove we were applying water in a much more efficient way, would you allow us to spread water rights over a larger area? If we could demonstrate the water was only being applied in the root zone. And we went through a 5-year study to prove that this would actually work. And this now provides farmers an incentive to use water much more prudently by applying it in different ways. There's ways of now watering vines by delivering the water right into the root zone from a drip line. This will require support from OSU. It will require a lot more training. And it'll require interagency regulatory involvement to promote more farmers to follow this practice. That's just an example of one of the things that we can do.
What about storage? You know, I've got a I was trying to find the article to bring it up because it was several years ago, but this, at one point the state had a grant, a family up in my district. I don't think they're doing this type of agriculture, but they're in a part of my district where water's a concern, up in the Pete's Mountain area, and we've got some, you know, Pete's Mountain wineries up there, but and they were granted some storage opportunity, and there were some dollars available. This was maybe about 6-7 years ago, and to be able to, you know, capture rain water for irrigation, but it's a pretty big investment to make that kind of storage happen. What are you guys talking about in terms of water storage besides just water rights for what's available?
And it varies for parts of the state, and yet these are big unknowns for us. We're just starting to have to face them now. We're definitely going to do research in this area.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Representative Gumberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciated all the testimony today, and I took special note of Mr. Bruno's comments about the relationship between Oregon State and some of our agricultural industries and the nature of industry and job creation in our rural areas. I just simply wanted to share with the committee that not all of his early employees were particularly skilled, and nor did all of them remain in the industry.
Any other questions? All right, with that, thank you both for your testimony. All right, Jacques Mills, is there anything you'd like to add before we close up today?
Okay.
All right, so I'd like to thank everybody for the testimony today, and tomorrow we'll begin our work sessions. Excuse me. Excuse me.